Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, author Joel Stein talks about spending time in Miami, Texas, and his book, In Defense of Elitism.
So for this book, In Defense of Elitism, I went to go spend a week in the county with the highest percentage of Trump voters. It's in Texas. And I'm very nervous that I won't meet anyone, or that people won't like me, or they'll find out I'm a Jew. So I had a lot of concerns. And she introduces me to the woman who's like the lunch lady. And she says, hello. And the second thing she says to me is, no matter what they tell you, everyone in this town is racist.
Today on the show, author Joel Stein talks about his new book, In Defense of Elitism, Why I'm Better Than You and You're Better Than Someone Who Didn't Buy This Book. Stick around.
Hey, this is Joel Stein and you're listening to Storyworthy.
My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show of over 9 years, Joel.
That's too long. We should end it here. This will be the last one, right? Is this the final one?
I can't stop now, man.
Okay.
I have is my RSS feed, and they can't take it from my hands. Anyway, you guys, I'm super happy you're here with us. I hope you enjoyed the show last week with comedian Stephen Alan Green and his story about being an American in England. Do you enjoy England, Joel Stein?
Well, I did until things turned over there.
Yeah, it's so strange, right?
So weird. That country is just in a permanent Brexit situation.
It's really unfortunate. And it's not like I spent some time over there because I dated a guy over there. And
Really?
And I was
afraid. Was it the accent or what were you into?
Well, the accent was huge.
Yeah, it
but
is.
But also that he was a soccer player.
Oh, and they don't even call it that.
Football, whatever. I don't care about any of that. Oh. But his physique was like.
Now, do you like that? A guy who's in great shape?
Yeah.
Well, because I have recently did a story. I've done this before. I got in really good shape. And my wife does not like it.
You lie.
We have so little sex when I'm in good shape because she feels she feels like she's not in good shape. She doesn't want me to be in better shape than her because it makes her feel bad about her body, which makes her feel unsexy, which makes her not want to have sex.
Interesting. Wow.
Yeah.
No,
but that's not everybody.
I'm all about the physique. Yeah, I really like that. I also though I like playing a lot of sports. Do you play anything?
Cribbage.
Cribbage? Are you on a treadmill at the time?
No, cribbage is usually just sitting down. I'm not sure what cribbage is.
Cribbage is, it's a card game, but then you score it by pegs.
Robert Goulet, my only celebrity friend, used to play cribbage and talked about it, but I didn't really know what he was talking about.
Yeah, I play with my buddy David Campbell. He's like 85. Yeah,
you play cribbage. You know a lot of old people.
I do. I like senior citizens.
Do you like
their
physique?
They know a lot. I like their physique.
Right.
And I think they know a lot.
Yeah, they do.
So anyway, you guys, go back, listen to Stephen Alan Green talking about England.
Yeah.
He had a very good experience over there. I don't know.
Oh, because of the guy.
Well, not because of the guy. I just felt like, like you said about Brexit, I feel bad for them because I don't feel like they ever had that much going for them to begin with. And I'm talking about the working class.
Okay.
Because it's sort of just depressing and gray. And remember that movie about that little boy who was a ballerina in Ireland?
Oh, yeah, they turned that into a musical, Billy Elliot.
Yeah, was that in Ireland or was that in England?
I believe that was in England.
Okay, remember how that looked and how dark it was?
Yes.
That was my experience.
But it's happening we'll talk about my book in a second, which is about this, but it's happening in nearly every country and some of them where it doesn't rain very much. A lot of the rural places in our country, which are basically Brexiting, and there's this populist movement, it's not so gray. It's warm out.
I see what you're saying.
Texas.
Well, I guess I think also more I'm talking about just the latitude of the country where it's England.
But everyone's Brexiting, even if it's not, even lower latitude countries are having some kind of populist revolution. Yeah, I don't think we can blame the weather, is all I'm saying.
No, I hear what you're saying. But there was like a glory days, it seemed like,
that's
for England.
That's what it is.
And I don't think that's...
And for lots of these Western countries. Yeah.
And that's not... And it's changing.
Yeah. They're exacerbating it, right? Like Brexit's going to cause Scotland to leave and maybe Ireland to leave. And the United Kingdom will be no more and the empire will be totally over.
Do you really think that's what's going to happen?
Oh, for sure.
Wow, I didn't hear that. I haven't heard that opinion.
Well, you heard it here.
Wow. Listen, you guys, I am so excited to have here today Joel Stein. Would you say you were an author or a journalist or...
humanitarian?
A satirist or...
not a satirist, probably.
Just a hottie. What would you say?
Right. Hottie. Definitely hottie. Yeah. That's mostly what I do for a living. A lot of Instagramming.
You've been on the show before.
This is my second time. Is that a record?
No, it's really good. And you've been on Story Smash. You were so funny judging Story Smash.
I was so confused. By Story Smash.
You were hilarious.
Not on purpose.
It worked out very well. And I'm excited to have you here. You've sat down with so many people. Have you been on Bill Maher's show?
I have.
Yeah. And are you going to go on with this new book?
No. Like, they've had me on for everything I've ever done. I'm totally grateful, so I'm not complaining. But they didn't seem to have room for me this time. Which,
it seems so odd.
I know. It seems like a very Bill Maher topic, like elitism.
It's totally a Bill
Maher. In defense of elitism. That's all he does.
It's totally about... Yeah. I mean, this new book, it cracks me up. The entire title, you guys, is In Defense of Elitism, Why I'm Better Than You and You're Better Than Someone Who Didn't Buy This Book. And it reminds me of this comedian I dated for a period of time.
How was his physique?
He was a Russian comedian.
Sounds like not good.
And I'm not going to say his name, but here's what he would say. He would say, Christine, there are always going to be the very, very rich and the very, very poor. What do you want to be? And wow. I don't want to add his name, but I will say, then he'd add, what a country.
I've talked to said comedian before.
Interesting.
Just on the phone.
Yeah.
And he seems like a very smart, but also like a business guy.
Very much so, yeah.
Yeah. Like he was able to work with the Soviet government on those cruise ships when he was a comedian in a really complicated way. I'm like, work through.
Oh, a long time ago, yeah.
Yeah, but he was able to kind of, people who were very smart were like Sovietologists, and they figured out how to say what they weren't allowed to say.
Right, because there was a ministry of jokes, and you would actually have to submit jokes, and those are the only jokes that could be told, and no matter who you were as a comedian, you would tell the same jokes. So it wasn't about, you didn't own a joke.
So,
in Russia,
which is communism, right?
Yeah. You can't own anything.
There's no intellectual property.
Anyway, so he would say that to me. What do you want to be? You want to be rich? You want to be poor? There's always going to be the two.
Well, let me just quickly define elitism in the book, because I'm not talking about money.
Okay.
The elite I'm talking about can be in the media, they can be in the government, they can be in academia, they can be working for non-governmental organizations. So we're talking about people who are more interested in giving a TED Talk than owning a yacht.
Interesting. Because to do this book, you went to Roberts County, Texas.
Yeah, which is where I think I'm going to tell a story from.
Interesting. Good. Okay.
I'm trying to think of a good story.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Okay, so go ahead. Tell me more then.
So Roberts County, Texas is the county in the country with the highest percentage of Trump voters.
Yeah, and you went there for how long? 96%.
I spent a week there.
A week. And where did you stay?
That's a great question, because I had been emailing the mayor Breeding, who also breeds cattle for a living, which
Get
I found.
Get out of here.
No.
Right?
Yeah, I think that they're just living in some kind of past, like England, where you got your name from being like, you know, whatever you did for a living.
Well, they say that Blackburn came from blacksmith from Germany.
And then he was bad at it and he hurt himself?
No, wait. I think it was not a blacksmith. Is it? Who makes shoes? A cobbler?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Okay, I'm off track.
But you think there
Blackburn
was a...
Blackburn came from
a blacksmith who hurt himself. Is that what happened? Like the worst blacksmith, and he just had scars everywhere?
Yeah, something like that.
Wow.
Okay, listen, the holidays are coming up, Joel, as you know, and you have a child, I have a child.
Yeah.
And here's the thing we got to do when we have kids. You got to preserve the memories. Do you know what I mean? Like, I have tapes of Alabama, even though it was only 12 years ago. They're still like on VHS tape or on 8mm, and they're on all these formats that I don't have the machines for anymore.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I can't watch them because I don't have a VHS player. Well, guess what? I have found Scan Digital, and they will take all those memories that are trapped on VHS tapes and in film reels and on printed pictures, and they will digitize it all for you. Scan Digital converts your photos, VHS tapes, old film slides, and even negatives into dependable digital files. And here's the best part about Scan Digital. Unlike their competitors, you don't have to count or pre-sort or organize your pictures or tapes. You can just send everything in the box. They'll go through every single photo album you send them. They'll take the photographs out of the album, they'll scan them, and then put the photo albums back together the way you sent them. This is like the smartest thing in the world, because now there's absolutely no excuse for not digitizing your memories. And you guys, right now, Scan Digital will convert everything, and in only 3 weeks, you'll receive back not only your originals, but you'll also get your newly digitized copies. And if you're not 100% satisfied, they will reprocess everything for free. You guys, join 500,000 satisfied customers and go to scandigital.com/storyworthy for 50% off. This is their best offer yet, but hurry up, you guys, it ends soon. Go to scandigital.com/storyworthy and get your memories back in digital form to share with your loved ones over the holidays. This is like a perfect time of year to do this. Get 50% off at scandigital.com/storyworthy. I mean, you guys, this is like a no-brainer. Okay, Joel. So go ahead, tell me more then.
So Roberts County, Texas is the county in the country with the highest percentage of Trump voters.
Yeah, and you went there for how long?
96%. I spent a week there.
A week? And where did you stay?
That's a great question, because I had been emailing the mayor, Breeding, who also breeds cattle for a living, which
get
I found.
Get out of here.
No.
Right?
Yeah, I think that they're just living in some kind of past, like England, where you got your name from being like, you know, whatever you did for a living. So for the book, I spent a week. And this guy, Chad Breeding, the mayor of Miami, Texas, which is, Roberts County is physically big, but it doesn't have many people. Half of them live in the town of Miami, which is 500 people.
Does it look like Miami, but with an A at the end?
It's actually spelled exactly like Miami, but pronounced Miami.
Oh boy, that's confusing.
It was very confusing. Yeah. I thought they were just had a deep Southern accent at first, and then I realized that Miami was actually a Native American tribe.
Yeah, I see. It's like Chile. It's, you know.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Is that tomato, tomato.
Is that how you pronounce the country?
So where
Chile?
Did you stay?
Yeah. So Mayor Breeding said, there's nowhere to stay here. You have to stay in the Holiday Inn in Pampa.
Wow.
Every town apparently in this area is like some twist on a town in Florida.
Yeah.
So I was going to go to Pampa, which is quite a bit away. And then the last kind of minute, I was looking online to think maybe one of these people's Airbnb in their house or something.
Yeah.
And it turns out Mayor Breeding either didn't know or didn't want me to know that there's a bed and breakfast in town. The Cowboys and Roses bed and breakfast.
Yeah. Where that sounds perfect.
Oh, it was perfect. It was even more perfect than I imagined, because one room was for cowboys. It was really masculine. And one room was roses. That was for the lady folk. And I really wanted to stay in the roses place, but the woman was like, you're staying in the Cowboys room.
Really?
Right? Yeah.
But it is so funny.
But the best part is nobody stays there often. So, and the woman who owns it doesn't even live in town. So I got the whole house to myself.
Oh my!
And the woman she hired to run the place was going to come over and make me breakfast every morning. And I was like, I can do this. I can make my own breakfast.
Crazy.
Yeah.
So that was like staying in like a Madonna inn. You know, and you
No, I got the whole inn.
I know, so you had both of those rooms.
Yes.
So where did you sleep? What bed did you sleep
in? I didn't dare even walk into the Roses room. Because everyone in town has a gun. And I wasn't going to take any chances by going. I don't even know what the Roses room really looked like. I peeked in. That was it.
It's probably like a Laura Ashley, you know.
It seemed it. It seemed like
so
it smelled better.
So you were there for a whole week.
I was there for a week.
Okay. So I think I'll do your intro real quick. And then I want to get into it, because I think that you're going to
I'm sorry. You gave me
right
this piece of paper that was so specific about the order to do things. And I blew it. You were so clear.
Listen, Joel Stein is here, you guys.
Did you mention the air date?
I'm super excited.
That's important.
They know the air date because
they're
listening.
That's on the list. Okay.
I'm super excited. Joel Stein is here, you guys. But before we get to Joel's story, I wanted to remind you to follow me on the social media at Storyworthy. Why? I don't know.
I don't know either.
It's what we do.
Why do we do it?
Because it's what we do. And I will say this.
Ego.
I enjoy the Twitter. I know you enjoy the Twitter.
I do.
There's a little shot of dopamine I get.
Don't like it. It's not good for us.
I know, but you know what? Twitter, it keeps me in touch. It makes me laugh.
You give it 2 thumbs up, by the way,
and
physically.
And I feel like I can. I'm putting my thumbs in the air.
You trumped it.
And I feel like I can support people on there, too. I don't know. I think it's a more pure form. I like words, though, more than pictures. So anyway, that's where I am mostly, you guys, over on Twitter. But you can also find me, of course, on Instagram and all that stuff. And also, why not check out StorySmashShow.com?
That's catchy.
You'll see you on there, Joel Stein.
Oh, then I'll
like
go.
Like I said, you were a judge on Story Smash.
Oh, that's not
so I have a lot of great pictures and a lot of great, all sorts of good stuff over there. StorySmashShow.com. Check that out. Okay, you guys.
You can win cash and prizes.
That's right. There's cash, prizes. Spin that wheel.
You've said that before. That came out really fast.
Joel Stein is here right now. As you know, he is an author and a Thurber Prize finalist and also a former staff writer for Time Magazine. Do you read Time Magazine anymore?
I don't. They don't send it to me at the house, and no, I don't see it.
It was always so dry to me, but there would always be the one funny column, and that would be you.
I was hoping you'd say it was mine.
There would be one thing that would be like candy in the whole goddamn pamphlet. You know what I mean? Now I look back, it seemed more like a pamphlet than a magazine. It was very thin for a while.
Well, when I first got there in 1997. It was still pretty thick.
Yeah.
And it had a lot of words in it back then.
They probably have, I haven't looked at those websites in so long, but do they have a good online presence? I would think, right?
I don't work for them anymore.
I'm just curious.
I was there for 20 years. I think they ran a chapter for my book on their online, on the time.com.
Oh, that's nice.
So I like that.
Yeah.
They don't seem
as relevant as they used to be. For
that's
a while
when I left. When they got rid of me, they became a lot less relevant.
For a while there, it was like, that was the shit, man. It was like Time and Newsweek, and that's it.
I interned at Newsweek in college.
Really?
Yeah, and it was like even when I got there, I mean, it was still making quite a bit of money, actually.
Sure.
And it was still, anyone you called would call you back, and that was, you get people to do all kinds of things, which was so exciting.
That is exciting.
But I mean, I think I missed the heyday of like the, 50s, 60s of when Time Inc. was really rocking.
But still, I bet you learned a lot there.
Oh my God, yeah. It was incredible. Just the access we had and the amount of stuff people, I just worked with really smart people. Like I didn't really realize until after I left that most offices don't have like 6 Rhodes Scholars on your hall.
Wow.
It was intense, yeah.
And how long were you at Newsweek?
I was only at Newsweek for a summer during college, but I was at Time for 20 years.
Right, but the Newsweek thing, it was nice because it kind of probably fed you right into the Time thing.
Oh, the Newsweek thing, I talk about it in the book, was what made me realize that like I wanted to be in the loop.
Is that right?
Which is what I called it.
Wow.
So I got there that summer, and I just realized how big the world was.
Yeah.
And that someone would just throw me an extra pass for like, the opening to a play or to the Democratic Convention or to like a book party at Limelight that Roddy McDowell was throwing.
Why not? Well, we still have pretty cool things that happen here in Los Angeles, but
the cool things still happen. It was the first time I knew about them.
Oh,
I had access to
it
them.
It opened your eyes.
And it just was like, oh my God, I want to live in this world where like I never pay for dinner because there's free hors d'oeuvres.
Yeah. Amazing. Yeah, that's true. Like just
stand near the kitchen.
Yeah, that's what they say, right? Because
that's when
the first appetizers come out.
Oh yeah.
They're the hottest.
That's the first thing you learn when you enter the loop.
Yeah.
No, they're not the hottest. There's no one's taken them yet.
Nobody's taken them yet. Also, you can kind of get that whole eating thing out of the way.
Well, I just do it the whole time.
You do?
Yeah.
I like to, when I go to like a little party like that, as it were, like a, and their things are coming around on a tray, I like to get all that eating in one thing. Do you know what I mean? I like to eat, and then
just
I'm done.
Just literally like fistfuls of food you're shoving down.
That's exactly right.
Really? That's a
good
look.
Then I go to the bathroom, I reapply my lipstick.
Oh, I thought you were going to vomit.
No, that was in college.
Okay.
But then I reapplied the lipstick. Then I can come out. And then when people pass by on the trays, then I say, no, thank you.
This is so Holly-go-lightly.
I say, no, thank you. And people think like, oh, you're not having anything. I'm like, oh, no, I'm fine.
What a society where women have to act that way.
See what I mean?
That's horrible.
It is horrible.
I can just stand there and eat the whole time. Wow.
Ladies and gentlemen, Joel Stein, I am so happy you're here. Like I said, your new book, In Defense of Elitism, Why I'm Better Than You and You're Better Than Someone Who Didn't Buy This Book, is available everywhere right now. And in my opinion, it makes a perfect holiday gift.
Especially if you have, family members coming over that you want, maybe who are Trump voters who you really want to piss off.
Yeah.
You just leave it out on the coffee table.
Let them pick it up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Or not even, just let them get angry.
And then just let the hilarity ensue.
Exactly.
You also narrated the audiobook.
Yeah. I didn't think of it as narrating. Yeah, I did it. I read it.
It's tedious, isn't it?
Well, I really like reading my own words, so it wasn't that tedious. Cracked myself up.
But you went to, I bet you didn't go into your closet like I did when I did an audiobook.
I'm out of the closet.
Now, where did you record? Obviously, at a studio.
I recorded here at a studio in Hollywood. I think they were called Outlaw Sound or something.
And were they, did they just let you do what you wanted? Or?
Well, the first time, my first book, they did, and I wanted, and then Mary Lou Henner came in the last day to re-record some part of her book. And I had cast, I knew her because I cast her to play my mom in a show once, in a sitcom I wrote. And she gave me all this advice, which was too late now, of how to read your book.
Oh, God.
And then, but I remembered it, and then I asked an actor friend to give me some advice. And then the producer, or director, I guess
director,
I had.
Really, yeah.
He was young, and I had very little hope, but he was great. And I feel like I did a decent job this time.
Oh, good.
But I'm not like you would. I'm not an actor.
No. But I mean, it's a tricky thing. You know,
But I do have a sexy voice.
You have a very sexy voice. I was going to say that. Mark Maron once said that he wishes that he had written his book after he read the audio book.
Totally.
Meaning that as he's reading it aloud, everything is changing.
Oh my God, it was like, that sentence doesn't work. And like, oh, that's not a good joke. Like, you hear it out loud.
That sucks, man.
I found some mistakes. Yeah. It's all too late to change.
Isn't that funny?
Oh my God, it was driving me crazy when I read it.
What can you learn from that? So in other words, before you...
Well, you do what David Sedaris does. And you go and tour and read your book out loud and see how people react. And I wanted to do that, but I didn't have time.
Interesting.
Or an audience.
Yeah, that is smart. You guys can find Joel over there on Twitter being funny and smart at the Joel Stein. There you go. All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together
for
Joel Stein. Yay, I can't wait to hear this story.
So for this book, In Defense of Elitism, I went to go spend a week in the county with the highest percentage of Trump voters. It's in Texas. And I'm very nervous that I won't meet anyone or that people won't like me or they'll find out I'm a Jew. So I had a lot of concerns, and I meet this woman who runs this bed and breakfast, and she agrees to like introduce me to everyone in town, which is amazing.
How old is she?
She's a little older than me, like a young grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
But she's cool. I'm very nervous when I get to this bed and breakfast, and she opens the. And I'm expecting a methed out, toothless mama, because I'd read Hillbilly Elegy. And instead, this woman answers, who's like a young grandmother, and she's got like a stud in the top of her ear, and another cool earring, and these kind of like very Brooklyn-y sunglasses, and she's on her like smartphone talking on a conference call with Rodan and Fields, which is, do you know that? Like, all my cousins are always trying to sell me makeup. It's one of these.
Oh, no, I don't know it. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's some multi-tiered marketing company. And she's like really cool and funny. And she agrees to show me around town. So she takes me to their brand new school that they've just built in this town, which also surprises me because I didn't think they were going to be spending a lot of money on education. I thought they'd be spending money just on cops and cop cars and cop outfits. But they have this brand new school and they're showing it to me. And she introduces me to the woman who's like the lunch lady in the cafeteria. And I just like, I'm nervous. I'm in this town. Like, hi, I'm Joel. I'm here reporting. So that's the voice I use when I'm reporting.
Yeah.
And she says, hello. And the second thing she says to me is, no matter what they tell you, everyone in this town is racist.
Wow.
Which is weird because if someone visited LA, you wouldn't be like, hi, just so you know, everyone in this town's a phony. Like, it's just not how you present your town.
Yeah.
And so that was in my head. And then that night, she brought me to have coffee with her friends. And we were, by the way, walk into the guy's house or the couple's house that we're going to have coffee at and walk into their living room. And there are 14 crosses on the wall.
Wow.
Right?
That's a lot of crosses.
That's more than any building I've ever been to, including churches.
You counted them.
I did.
Yeah.
I did. And there was one that I found really interesting and I asked him about it. And then he brought me into his garage and he showed me where he takes Reader's Digest condensed books and carves them into crosses.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then he paints them or something?
No, he like puts this little bow around them with a little cloth flower and sells them.
People who like a lot of crosses do seem to be quite crafty.
That's an interesting observation. I think you might be right.
Yeah.
Yeah. This isn't why they do it, but of all the things to craft, it's a pretty simple thing to craft.
Yeah, it is. By the way, the first person that you met, the lunch lady, it seems very ominous that she would say that.
Yes.
Like almost like in a Stepford Wives thing, like turn back while you can.
Well, she, I think, was one of the few people in town who had mixed race children and they left as soon as they could. And she had a different experience. Wow. So I was on this porch that night and people kept just showing up at this house, which was so nice. Like people aren't.
They knew you were there.
No, I think they just do this every night and they're not looking at their phones and they're just hanging out and talking, and it's quiet out, and you're in this, like, you know, screened in porch in Texas, and it's just kind of lovely. And then one of the guys, everyone's super friendly except this one kind of ornery guy, Jerry. And Jerry says to me, it's this, the host is doing this lovely thing where she's introducing me and she's saying that I wrote this. She's making me sound important. She's saying I wrote this, column for Time. And Jerry goes, I know who he is. And he says, I've read your column.
Wow.
Which is a weird, people, when they observe something about you, usually throw in a compliment. It's usually like nice shoes, yeah, not just like sure. shoes, which is what this felt like. And then he said, when you came down here, did you think we'd all be racist? I was like, oh man, like, how do I say yes?
Yeah, the lunch lady told me.
And I wanted to do it in a nice way though. And so I thought about it and I went with no, which got across the nice part, but not the yes part.
Yeah.
And so, we talked for a while. And then a couple days later, I was...
Wait, so they left that night and you just said, okay, well, thanks for chatting with me.
Yeah, we actually wound up going to breakfast, I think, the next day at the cafe.
You slept with him?
And I went to... I slept with him, which was really scary because they all have guns. And don't lock their doors, by the way.
Yeah.
So when I asked the bed and breakfast, the woman running my bed and breakfast,
yeah.
for a key before she left, she said, oh, we don't lock doors here. And then I said, do you have a gun? And she said, yeah, my purse. We all have guns. And so the whole week, every time I came back to my bed and breakfast, I had to check the address like 7 times before I walked in.
Where is my Emma?
So can you picture like the panhandle of Texas, the top part? No. So like near Oklahoma. Exactly. Yeah.
That is the middle of the country.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very, very rural.
So you met those guys for breakfast.
Yeah. And then I went to church with them. And then to like Bible study. I went to, what else did I do with this? There's a bunch of different groups. This was a particularly Baptist religious group.
So you're,
it's a dry county, which made reporting even harder.
Alcohol. Yeah. Yeah. So all this time, are you using a tape recorder? Are you taping anybody? Are you making little notes? Are you looking around or what?
It's interesting. You know, I'm trying to change. I'm a little old school. I take notes. I feel like when you, no offense to the Story podcast, which is different, but when you record people, and certainly when you take out a video camera, it changes the conversation.
Yeah.
And so I try and just, I have a little old school reporter's notebook where I take notes.
But the notes that you're taking are your take on what you heard.
No, I usually do that later. So I'm just kind of verbatim writing down what people say or what I see. Or no, it's very objective.
Okay.
The notes themselves.
Okay.
I mean, if I have an idea, I guess I jot that down too.
Yeah.
If I think of a funny line.
But you're just setting the scene.
Yeah, while I'm there.
Yeah. So then you go to all these places.
And then I go to dinner at this one couple's house who live like 2 houses down from where my bed and breakfast is. They're awesome. And we're having they made me this amazing chili. Everyone's so nice to me. Yeah. I don't eat a meal alone. I probably feel like I know more people in Miami. I'm more likely to run into someone I know in Miami than here in LA, for sure.
Yeah.
Even after just a week there. But I was at this couple's house, and they're super cool. And at some point, the woman says, kind of apropos of nothing, the problem with the blacks is, and I remember that moment and thinking like, can I spill my iced tea? Like, how do I stop the end of this sentence? Like what? Because once she says it as a reporter, I feel like I have to put it in the book. And no sentence that starts with the problem with blacks is, right. has an ending that I'm right. going to like.
Right.
It's never like the problem with blacks is right. it doesn't bring out my eye color.
Right.
It's,
right.
Yeah. And so I really thought so much about like, can I get this dog to hump my leg again? Like, what can I do to just end, to stop her?
Yeah. Just coughing fit.
Yeah.
Feign that you're ill.
Yeah. Or just finish the sentence for her.
So what did she say?
Just jump on the grenade. I can read it from my book, but the ending wasn't great. It was about Black Lives Matter.
Yeah.
And in people's defense down there, it's a totally white town where the cops get along with people. And the idea that you would get pulled over for no reason seems absurd.
Yeah.
And cops really represent the last of the truly respected non-elite jobs in our country. It's about bravery, and it's a physical job, and it doesn't require a lot of education. So insulting cops is kind of like insulting them.
Yeah.
So I failed, and I remember just feeling this real tension between I don't want to record what she said because I think they're like nice people who just have a different experience about some things, and I'm ignorant about other things. I feel like they knew more about my life than I knew about theirs.
But they're taught, well, you're in a public place.
Right. But I also think about things I've said in my life when, you know, back in the 80s or 90s that would be horrible now, and they're just living
in the past. So you give them the benefit of the doubt, as it were.
Yeah.
And then what?
And then I just have to decide whether I write down what she said or not.
Yeah.
And put it in the book.
And did you have to describe elitism to them, or did you have
over
to tell
over
them?
Yeah. And everyone else. Yeah. Yeah.
And in the context that you're talking about, like you said, you're not talking about rich and poor. You're talking about what you feel like in respect to everybody else in the room.
I'm talking about the people who influence and control the way the world is. And that's...
You mean the white male? No.
Well, they would say the opposite. So what they feel is that, like, when you ask white Christians, and this was true of everyone I talked to in Miami, if Christians or white people or white Christians are more discriminated against than black people in our country, they all, that's a big hallelujah. They all say yes to that question. And that was hard. I'm a smug bastard. And that's part of the problem with being an elitist. And I tried to just stifle that and listen. And eventually I heard what they meant, which was that human beings, everyone feels acceleration. We don't feel speed. And white Christians and men have less power than they used to have.
That's right. Yeah.
And they feel that, and they feel like it's an existential threat, and they need
to fix it. Yeah, and in a way, it's not fair, because it's not like all men are like that, and it's not like you're like that, or, you know, not everybody's Louis C.K. and wants to just whip out, you know, and not all men are like that, and not all men are racist, and not all men are, you know, all those things.
But I don't even think it's...
It's hard for them in a way.
I think it's one step before that. I don't think it's like I'm being blamed for other men. I think it's, so I like to think of it of how I experience this so I can relate. And it's that I am often faced with a choice, which is, do I want to think about things that I've done and do and the kind of porn I look at or however I want to put it, like things I do. And do I want to say, oh, that's not right. I wish I acted differently. I'm going to try and change. Or do I want to say, that's how men are hormonally. And like, you are asking me, you don't understand what it's like to be a man. And you're asking me to act against my nature and against my will. And it's unreasonable and impossible.
Right.
Like, those are my choices.
Right.
And I'm always going to choose the second one. It's just a much easier choice to justify your action.
No,
right?
No.
Always.
That's not what you do.
That is 90% of the time. That's what my brain does.
Really?
For sure. Yeah, I'm like, look, that's just dudes. Like, it's not fair for you to expect us. We have a different sex drive. We have a different,
So are you, like, in your head, like, always in a writer's room of a sitcom? I mean...
I'm literally in a writer's room of a sitcom sometimes.
Yeah, I see.
But, no. So,
but you're very intelligent. And comedy is intelligence. And so you're kind of going...
There are plenty of sexist comics. Like, I don't...
You're going many steps beyond.
Yeah, but you can't... You don't have the willpower to do that all the time. The culture is so dominant. So
yeah, but wait a minute. Okay, so between you and I, we were talking about Ed Asner earlier.
Oh my God, that's amazing. What he comes out full on Harvey Weinstein on you.
Yeah, kind of all cocks blazing and whatever. And he was just kind of really inappropriate in some of the respects with me, which I didn't air, and I'm not going to air. But the point is...
Imagine being 90 and that's still like your drive.
So that's what my point is. So he has that choice every day. He doesn't have to say things that are sexist. I mean, what do you mean? Of course.
So
how does he defend himself? He's smarter than that.
You can tell yourself a lot of stories and justify a lot of things for your behavior and your natural inclinations.
Yeah.
And if you live in a society, I mean, the systemic change needs to come from society, right? Like, we need to suffer on some level or have examples of how not to act.
Right, and that's where we're at right now.
But when you say men are like, I'm not like that, I think it's more than that. I think I heard the Cambridge Analytica guy very smartly explain this in that a lot of men right now feel, straight men, mm-hmm. feel closeted. Mm-hmm. What they feel is like, I can't act normally or I'm going to get yelled at. I can't be myself in public. And that's not fair.
I hear what you're saying, but I guess like I know, I don't know. Like I think about like my brother, like he's like a real man. Like my brother would never, at least to my knowledge, I've known him my whole life. He would never act in a way that, you know, and I don't think he has to try to act respectfully. He just is. He's a respectful guy. He would never say something out of off color in front of mixed company, as it were. I don't think he would.
But
I don't think he has to try.
Ask him if he's ever done things that he's not proud of.
And no, I hear what you're saying. Like, and I've done things I'm not necessarily proud of, but I can say 99.9% of the time, I'm always saying things that are okay, are not unkind.
Yeah.
But why do men have to be? Why is it so hard for a man to watch his mouth?
Well, because we didn't have to.
Yeah. Well, then that's where we're at the crux of this has to change.
Because yes, but because you still, there's a lot of men who are still feeling like, I observed an attractive woman. I want to compliment her on being attractive.
Yeah.
And she's going to like it. And it's nice of me. And that's how men are. And that's how men and women relate.
So the words are, you look really nice. Those are the words. Like, what else would the words be? And who would be offended at that? You know what I mean? You look really nice. In other words, there's that. Or there's, boy, aren't you stacked.
Right. Right.
So, like, my brother would never say that. He would always say, oh, you look really nice. Like, right. I don't know why that was.
But it depends what year and what culture you grew up in.
Yeah, I know. I guess I just feel like now it's 2019 and we gotta get on board. Okay, so tell me more about Miami. No, I want to know then. Then you gather this information or you're gathering data.
Yeah.
You're gathering, because you're taking like a sample of.
Yeah, it needs to take a sample. There's 500 people there. I could basically meet them all. I really didn't need a sample. There's very few people I didn't meet.
Yeah. Okay, so tell me more about them. And then you took what they thought and you put it into the book.
So the book is, I start the book at a party at the 2016 election night party.
Yeah.
Where I've brought a bottle of Trump's Virginia sparkling wine, his Blanc de Blanc, and I'm thinking we're going to like open it and toast his demise with his sad attempt to become an elite with this wine. And the bottle never gets opened. I don't know what happens to it because things take a turn.
Yeah.
And I just remember being really, truly freaked out. Couldn't eat anything except like bread and rice for a couple days.
Yeah.
Not because a Republican had won. Like some of my friends who make great wine are Republicans.
Sure, sure, sure.
But it was that the elite hadn't lost to a populace since probably Andrew Jackson.
Yeah.
Not in this kind of way. And the results of populism are very scary historically. You know, they're Cambodia, they're the Cultural Revolution in China, they're, you know, you can have a real dark ages.
No kidding. Look at Pol Pot, right? Who wiped out everybody. Everybody.
If you had glasses, if you could read, if you were a doctor.
Yeah, educated in any way.
Yeah. And sadly, if you go to Cambodia now, they're the nicest, friendliest people with great tourism. So it's not a good example. Yeah. But still, no one in Cambodia has won a Nobel Peace Prize. I mean, a Nobel Prize of any kind.
Yeah.
Although I'd rather have like friendly people.
So you're saying they only go to the smartest or the most elite schools for those.
Yeah, Cambodia got, I mean, seriously, Cambodia got sent back five generations from Pol Pot.
Wow.
And that is what happens when you deny expertise and you believe that people can operate from the gut and that you just inherently know more than the generals know.
Oh my
and
gosh.
That's a scary world to me. Denying that globalism did a lot of good for the world and trying to like shut down all of your borders to immigrants and to trade and to bring your interest rates to zero. These are populist movements that cause a lot of long-term damage.
So do you think our country, we're still on the way down then?
I love that you're drawing a heart as we talk about the end of civilization. Is this to cheer you up?
It's a doodle.
I love that. It's like there's still love in the world. We're going to be okay. do I think our country's headed for that? That's a cool cool, interesting thing about living through history.
Yeah, we is that, are.
Look, when I was a kid, I'm Jewish, and I'd go to Hebrew school, and they'd show me like stuff about Kristallnacht, and all I could think was, why are the Jews in Germany so stupid? Like, wow. Why didn't they leave? And now that I'm living through a historical moment, I realize you have no idea what's going to happen.
Yeah, no idea.
Like, you've seen this play before. You've seen Pat Buchanan. You've seen populism. Yeah. And it usually washes over. Yeah. It's like when they tell you to leave your house because there's going to be a flood and you've been warned 10 times. Like, you don't know which time is real. And I feel like right now, I don't know. Does this wash over like McCarthyism? That's is this the last gasp of old white people? I don't know.
It's the scariest thing because it's unpredictable.
Yeah.
Where are the hottest impeachment parties going to be?
That's a great question. I already was invited to one that was away, but it was at my neighbor Stephanie Miller's house.
Oh, yeah, right.
She's a liberal radio host. She lives like right down the street from me, and she's the party I was at for the 2016 election.
Oh, wow.
She's been waiting to have an impeachment party forever.
That will be a big party.
Yeah.
And so...
But he's not the problem. Yeah. Like, Trump is just...
Well, he's the... What would you say then? The
he's
result.
Like... I just think, you know, he's one of the cancerous moles on this melanoma. Like, getting rid of him doesn't get rid of populism. It's in every country. And there's, we'll get a smart, we're lucky we got the dumb one.
Yeah. And so does it lead, do you think, to things like ethnic cleansing? I mean,
it's weird because it can and it can't. Like, certainly as a Jew, that's what I worry about. And I see it pop up in weird ways. Like in Poland, they didn't turn, because there's no Jews left, but instead of turning on, you know, some Syrians or some minority, they turned on the gays there.
Yeah.
So populism usually comes with a belief in blood and soil, and there's some group that doesn't fit, or group or groups that don't belong
which
in your blood
Kurds
and soil.
Which is the Kurds right now. Yeah.
To Turkey, it's the Kurds.
In northern Turkey, yeah.
Yeah, they've always hated the Kurds.
Yeah. What do you tell your son? Because what I tell my daughter...
Oh, you wrote
daughter,
Kurds, and now you're going to draw a heart over the Kurds? No heart for the Kurds!
My daughter is 12.
Right.
And
Kurdish.
And Kurdish. And it's hard because I don't have, like, the language you have. I just tell her constantly, Alabama, we are not living through normal times. You know, like
Alabama, what? That's her name?
That's my daughter's name, yes.
You named her after a populous state. This didn't help.
Well,
you were going to name her Mississippi, but you were like, that was too much.
I keep thinking I should have named her something more progressive, you know, like California. Or
listen, Massachusetts, things are going to be fine.
I could have named her Alyssa Milano. That would have helped. I tell her, Alabama, okay, she was alive. The first 8 years of her life was with Barack Obama.
My son's 10.
Okay, right. So now, then we have this. And I tell her, this is not normal. This is not how presidents behave.
Right.
You know, I don't know if you saw the recent video of Barack Obama against...
The Kimmel one?
Yeah, the Kimmel
so
one.
So good.
The two of them.
So he blurred my book.
The caption. Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah, I emailed him to tell him how much I liked that.
Oh, that was nice, Jimmy Kimmel. Oh, that was so nice.
It was nice of him. He's super nice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've met him before as well. So we're talking about that mashup he did of basically Barack Obama talking about catching bin Laden and then Trump speaking about catching Baghdadi. And it was just so...
That was hilarious.
It's hilarious. It's also sad.
I emailed him and told him how important that video was.
Important.
Besides being hilarious, because it shows you... Because things get normalized.
Yeah.
Like, we're getting used to this.
I know.
And the comparison is so useful to be like, this is not the way presidents act.
And I show my daughter things from Obama, and I'll show her. I'll say, see, honey, that's a presidential tweet. See, honey, look. And I'll, because I'm always, you know, and I'll show her, this is what should be happening.
But this is how dictators and populists act.
Always act.
Did you hear the president of Brazil's rant 2 days ago? Whoa. So he was accused of having been involved in the murder of this lesbian politician in the city. And the main Brazilian network kind of tied him to it.
Yeah.
But he went on some social media and just screamed like a madman for like 20 minutes.
That
like a
saying
crazy
something
person.
Like, I can do that if I want, or what was he saying?
No, he didn't go that far. No, he thinks he's been wrongly accused, but he's going to shut down the media. It was the tone more than even what he said.
So what do you tell your son?
But people love that. People love strongmen.
Well, because they go to wrestling. I mean, you know, I mean, this isn't unusual. I mean,
but there's something that...
There's monster truck rallies and they still get people at them.
But there's something about having your country run by a strongman.
But there's something about pure entertainment, too, and I think they just want
to
wrestle things up because they're bored as shit, and they're sitting in these in Miami, Texas, and they got nothing else going on, and they can't see the big picture because it does not affect them.
And when it doesn't affect them in a good way.
So what do you tell your son? That's what I want to know.
So I freaked out the night of the election. Mm-hmm. And he had spent being like living in this super liberal enclave, having NPR played in the car, and his mom was more liberal than me, ranting against Republicans and Trump in particular. The night of the election, the only thing I could do to like get him to bed in his pajamas and try and smile was I said to him, "Trump won, and it's not going to affect your life at all," which has turned out to be true. Like, I didn't know if it was true at the time, but I figured his timeline is like, he can't think more than a week ahead. I think he's 10. Sure, I figured he'd be fine for a week. But it has turned out to be true. And we're so fortunate that like we are people not affected by this.
Well, that's what my family back east would say. They would say, you know, as soon as you say anything negative about, you know, Trump or the administration, they say, all politicians are like that.
Right.
It's always like this. Yes. And it doesn't mean Adam Carolla anything says to this. You.
Yeah. Whoever's president doesn't affect my life. And it doesn't. It doesn't affect Adam Carolla's life. It doesn't affect my life. But, but it affects a lot of people.
It affects my life in that I can't let my daughter watch the president speak.
Yeah, but that's more, I mean, that is important as far as the future of democracy and norms. And that's what I'm really worried about. But of course, if you're, a kid who was taken here when he was 6 months old, it affects you. If you're a refugee trying to get into this country, it affects
you. I mean, but even to the extent that I'm listening to the news on the way to school and it comes on and it says, because Trump said, grab him by the whatever, and they have to beep out what the president said. And then my daughter says, what did the president say? And I said, well, I can't actually say that. Like, it's just, it's hard to explain.
And it's hard to go back after that. Like, you don't go back to the founding fathers after you get Andrew Jackson.
Yeah.
So I'm worried about the tone, but I'm also worried about the norms. Like, we keep our society together. Everyone keeps saying to me, like, well, he should be impeached because he broke the law.
Yeah.
We're a country of laws. Like, he has to be impeached. And I keep wanting to say, like, laws are sort of meaningless if the population doesn't want to abide by them. And we're getting to a point where democracy itself is something people don't want to abide in. And I get into it in the book as far as the percentage of young people who think the country should be ruled by the military instead of an elected leader. People aren't real into democracy right now. They feel like it's too slow. They feel, which is how it was designed by our founding fathers on purpose. They feel like it's not giving them what they want right now.
Yeah.
And we're moving more towards direct democracy. We live in California. Like, we're voting on things we should never be voting on.
I know, that is so strange.
We're voting
to
on
me
judges too.
Yeah, why are they asking me who I should, who should be a judge? Why would I know that?
Also, the propositions, which are purposely confusingly written and like about very complicated things.
Yeah, I'm not sure why we have, but then
because people want direct democracy and they want it right now, and it's leading towards, the republic was built so carefully, and we've taken away so many of the safeguards, and we're giving all this power to one person.
Yeah, because we want immediate gratification.
Yeah, we want. Trump is the great simplifier.
It's sort of fun, though, watching it all burn, isn't it? Like, crash and burn. Isn't it sort of fun? Like, when Rudy Giuliani butt-dialed that reporter last week. It's super funny. It's like, Keystone Cops. It's sort of funny. And then when you see that Trump literally had that photo of the dog photoshopped. He's putting there's no metal of him putting a, there's no picture of him putting a medal around a dog. It was photoshopped.
Yeah, but my fear is that, like, look, there's nothing funnier than Putin on a horse without a shirt.
That is funny,
hilarious, but also very effective.
Interesting.
Like, and we get into the point where we're making jokes about our authoritarian leader the same way we made jokes about George W. Bush, or the same way we made jokes about Bill Clinton, and we do make those same jokes. I feel like we've normalized it, and we're forgetting that, like, we are about to throw out everything.
Well, these impeachment proceedings are important, right? Obviously.
I don't think so, but...
You don't think so?
I don't.
Come on. Really?
Yeah.
But what are the steps then? We have to take the steps.
The steps is to convince this nation that they don't want an authoritarian leader, and they want someone with some expertise.
Did you convince anybody down in Miami?
I don't think you convince... I think one of the problems with elites especially liberal elites, but no, I'd say conservative elites too, is that everyone keeps asking me, did you convince them? And once you go down there with that attitude and talk to people that you are just going to explain things to them logically and they're going to listen to you because they're dumb, you've already lost.
I see.
I went down there to listen. I didn't go down there to convince.
I know, but you just said before that, you said the way isn't going through impeachment. The way is to convince people that they want somebody who's educated and smart and that you want them to believe scientists.
And that you're listening to them.
Right.
And so, even though it seems crazy that they think white Christians are discriminated against, because their pain isn't as big as other people's pain.
Yeah.
Their pain is real. Rural America is in trouble. Rural England's in trouble.
They're bored.
I don't even think they were bored. I think they...
There's no industry. The industry's left their town.
And it's not even economic. Things change. To us, gay marriage, transgendered people, Me Too movement, these aren't new. These aren't crazy. But if you live elsewhere in the country, these things just happened.
Mm.
Globalization just happened. Mm. The massive immigration that we've seen in the last 20 years feels very new to people.
Mm-hmm.
And they're processing this change, and we are angry at them for not processing it as quickly as we are, as we do. When we say don't say tranny, to a lot of people, it sounds like don't drink oaky Chardonnays.
Yeah.
It's just us acting superior because we see the trends more quickly than they do.
So you can't say tranny?
No, you can't say tranny. You should cut that from this.
I'm going to cut that. No,
just beep it.
Are you bored at all
during this conversation? I'm not the one doodling.
Are you bored at all talking about this topic? Because you write the book, so obviously you're interested, and obviously you want to put it on paper. And now you got to do the book tours, and you got to talk about it over and over.
I'm like a humor writer. I should be writing about the goofy things my 10-year-old son did, and any other time in my life, that's what I was doing, that's what I would be doing, and I was doing for this book. And then I realized that it felt really stupid and unimportant. And I had to write a book about politics instead.
Okay, so then exactly. Everyone does. It very seriously.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. Everybody's using their voice, their platform, and speaking out. So then why do you say that the impeachment process isn't worth it, or it's not, you know?
Oh, because my fear, I wrote a piece for the Washington Post, I think, last Sunday, op-ed piece. And the argument I make is that impeachment seems very elite. In a negative way. It seems like a bunch of people who want to help their own make political points and are using, obscure parts of the Constitution to try and subvert the democratic will of the people. And it's not going to result in kicking him out. It's just going to be a big political show instead of helping American people with real issues. And I feel like it's going to play very badly. It played very badly for the Republicans with Clinton. And I feel like it's going to play that same... look, I'm an elite. There's nothing I enjoy more than seeing people dig up parts of the Constitution and then have a courtroom inside the Senate with the Supreme Court justice the Chief Justice in his robes presiding. It's like a PBS special. It's awesome for me.
It's amazing.
Yeah, but that's not how most Americans, especially the ones who hate the elite, are going to feel about this.
I know, but you can't compare what happened to Clinton to what's happening now. These are words on a page. These are transcripts that we know. We know what was redacted. We know what wasn't.
I don't think there are Americans who are what we call informed voters who don't have enough information about Trump to decide if they want to keep him or not.
Yeah.
I don't think those people exist.
I see.
I think there are people who are uninformed voters who aren't going to follow this, who just think this is politics.
Ay, ay, ay. Ay, ay, ay.
Honestly, it's way better for the future of democracy if you vote him out big time.
Except for the fact that if the election is hacked again, then... in other words, now you're talking about we have to change the Electoral College because Hillary Clinton did win the vote.
No, but... I sort of disagree with that too. I think we have an electoral college for a reason. We have an unfair Senate system, which is way more unfair than the electoral college.
Yeah.
The fact that there's two senators from Wyoming.
Exactly. And two in California.
There are literally as many people in this part
at my Trader Joe's.
Yes.
Than in Wyoming.
There's fewer than 500,000, I think, or around 500,000 people in Wyoming.
Yeah.
So, but that's the compromise we made. As a republic.
Right.
And it's not a pure democracy. And in some ways, that's great because we're protecting rural people from the centers of power.
Sure, sure, sure.
And we, you know, there's a lot of things we built into this system that are not purely democratic. Not everyone can vote. Like, right. We have a lot of rules about all this stuff.
Okay, but still, if the election is hacked, the election is hacked.
I don't think that's what it was, though. I think people, look, maybe it was, maybe there was people convinced on Facebook of things that weren't true.
Yeah.
Undoubtedly.
And that's continuing, of course.
And that's continuing. And people have been convinced in the past things that weren't true. I don't think that's what caused Donald Trump to win.
Yeah.
I mean, I can just look at so many countries that have populist leaders, and it wasn't hacking. It's this great change of the knowledge economy, people moving to cities and globalization and immigration that freaked and feminism that freaked people out.
Yeah.
The hacking isn't going
to
be.
Okay, so what can we do if we're not going to convince them? We're just going to put information out and hope that they look at it.
We're going to make them feel listened to and respected.
I see. Okay.
And we're not going to just immediately call them racist because that's lazy.
Isn't it interesting that Trump chooses Twitter instead of Facebook? It's interesting. I would think that he would do Facebook because it's such a simpler platform.
But it's not a publishing platform the same
way.
And that's
also where his people are. More of
you can reach way more people potentially through Twitter because it's a publishing platform more than like a sharing platform.
Interesting. Oh, that's an interesting way to look at it. You're putting things on the wall.
That's why I'm on Twitter because it just feels like writing.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel any different than anything else I do. Whereas Facebook confuses me. Instagram, I don't get.
Yeah. Oh, that's so funny you should put it that way. I mean, I feel the exact same way, but I always just thought it because I like words. But I guess what you're saying is I like writing.
Well, you're not like discussing. Like on Facebook, I feel like people are talking to you and you're talking back at Twitter. You're just like posting and
yeah,
you're done.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I go back and forth with some people, but not the crazy people.
Much as on Facebook. Like yeah. Facebook, the whole point is to comment and like, right?
Yeah. Oh, she's so cute. Oh, happy anniversary. Oh, I love the baby.
Oh, you're making it sound awful.
Yeah, it is.
Oh my God.
It is. Yeah, it is. I am still on it because I have, you know, the live shows and some,
you know,
my podcast and stuff. But it's definitely, like I posted the other day, will the last person to leave Facebook please turn off the lights?
Oh, you know? And did they?
I don't know. If
did Asner cause you to think that after seeing the last Mary Tyler Moore show?
People are definitely leaving, but it's also, I don't know. It's tricky. It's like I'll never fall for those ads, but then they're not targeting me is the problem.
Oh, you will fall for those ads. So there's a chapter in my book where I hang out with the this guy who had kind of been the king of fake news. His name's Justin Kohler.
Uh-huh.
And he got in big trouble after the election because he had posted very effective articles about all fake stuff that Hillary Clinton supposedly did. NPR figured out who he was. They came to his house. He got death threats. He was on 60 Minutes. So I hang out with the guy thinking he's going to be an alt-right maniac.
You know everybody.
Well, I didn't know him. I just went to go meet him.
Okay.
But I had spent like 3 days with Milo Yiannopoulos. And so I knew the alt-right types.
Yeah.
I did that for a different story. And so I met him. And instead of being like an alt-right crazy person, he was a liberal journalist who had been laid off. And he was sitting in his apartment upset that about the alt-right because he was a news junkie. And he's like, I'm going to create a fake story.
Wow.
And they're going to believe it. And then I'm going to tell them it's fake. And they're going to realize they're idiots. And I'm going to destroy the alt-right. And like half of that plan worked because he wrote something fake and they believed it. But then when he told them it was fake, they didn't care.
Huh.
Because they said like, if this specific thing wasn't real, things like this are real.
Wow.
This just proves the general
point.
Wow,
that's crazy.
So then he wound up going from political science experiment to money-making experiment. And he created all of these
fake
ads. But what he learned after the election, he thought just Republicans are idiots and they're going to believe fake news.
Yeah.
But what he's since learned is that, and I get into this in the book, because I create a little piece of fake news and try and distribute it on Twitter somewhat successfully, is that whoever's not in power, cognitive dissonance is very strong, and they are desperate to believe things that make them feel better. And so right now, liberals are really easily fooled by fake news.
What did you put
The Trump guerrilla channel is the first example that comes to mind, but there's so much of it.
What did you put? What did you put on Twitter that was fake?
So this other guy, the guy who wrote Shit My Dad Says, who's a sitcom writer, he's been putting out fake news on Twitter. Very funny stuff.
Oh, I didn't know that. What's his name again?
His name is Justin.
Yeah, Justin Long.
No, that's the actor. No,
yeah.
Oh my God, this is awful.
No, I know who he is.
He showed me how to go into Google Chrome and take an article.
Yeah.
And it's very easy. You just change some words and it looks just like the original. You can take a New York Times article and without messing with the layout or the font, change things, screen grab it, post it.
Sure,
looks perfect.
Sure.
So the thing I posted was right after Stormy Daniels first came out in In Touch magazine saying that she slept with Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And I changed part of the story to be that she was in bed with him and he'd said something about 50 senators. And she's like, oh, there's 100 senators. And he's like, sweetheart, there's 50 states. And he started singing that 50 nifty United States song. And it just added it to her take on sleeping with him.
Yeah.
And a small group of people got really excited that he was singing the 50 nifty United States song.
That's funny. Well, we are living in interesting times.
That's the curse, the Chinese curse.
It's the strangest thing that this is all going to be in history books someday.
And what I'm really interested in is the fact that when I was taught history, everything had a simple reason.
Yeah.
Oddly enough, when I was growing up, they taught us the Civil War was due to economic disparity and anxiety between the North and South.
Yeah.
Not about slavery.
Right. It was always like the slavery was part of it, but it wasn't secondarily. The main thing. Yeah,
Which, by the way, wasn't taught before we went to school and isn't taught now.
Yeah.
It's not true.
Yeah.
But there's always some simple reason. And this is going to be simplified. They're going to say it was... No, but you have to. You can't learn the complexity of everything. So there's going to be... Someone's going to figure out a plausible reason this huge populism wave happened. And maybe it'll be the knowledge economy destroyed the industrial economy, and that was too big a change. Maybe it'll be people talking about the diversity factor and the fact that white people became a minority. I don't know what it's going to be, but there's going to be some reason given, and those of us who lived through it will know that it was somewhat more complicated.
It's going to be something more internet related. It's going to be something about the way that we're getting our news. It's going to be about that, we forget what happened 10 minutes ago. You know what I mean? I never go past Twitter past 2 hours. It's everything has to be so fresh.
Yeah.
Ay, ay, ay.
That's a great noise.
Thank you. All right, are you already writing another book?
No.
What's next?
I don't know. You have ideas?
Well, you're so bright.
I'm so smart.
You're very bright.
It's weird, right?
Well, it's not weird, but...
I actually give off more heat than most human beings, just from brain power. I have to eat so much fish.
You're going to stay in California, right? You're not going back to New York.
No, they won't have me.
Yeah, no, but I mean, you're living here, you're raising your child here. You're here.
Yeah, it's so much nicer here.
I know. I just think about... playing tennis as much as I do. It's just the best.
I know. They don't even know what tennis is in New York.
What do you do for outdoor activity? What do you do? Anything?
I do a skeet shooting.
What?
No.
Skeet? Do you do anything in the park? You live in the park, close
I
to
do.
The park.
I go hiking.
Yeah.
I'm really bad at tennis. Occasionally I'll play tennis. I'm an indoors kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a new sport called pickleball. It's super fun.
Oh, yeah. Old Jews love that. My dad was playing that for a while.
It's a blast.
I'll do that.
You should. I have an extra set right in there.
Really?
I could teach you to play.
I would love to play pickleball.
It's super fun. Yeah. Okay. Because it's all the fun of tennis without the running. Although
that seems to be the purpose of tennis.
There's still a lot of running. But it's more back and forth. And
there are no pickles involved.
There are no pickles.
It's unfortunate.
I know.
That's how they trick the Jews into playing, I think.
Listen...
called a pickleball.
All right, you guys, we're going to wrap it up. I want to thank you so much for tuning in today. Joel Stein, you are amazing.
I thought you were thanking me.
I am thanking you.
You're really thanking the listener.
You guys can find his brand new book, In Defense of Elitism, Why I'm Better Than You and You're Better Than Someone Else Who Didn't Buy This Book. It makes a great holiday gift. It really does. You're super funny.
It fits in a stocking.
It fits in a stocking. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it. And one more time on behalf of Joel Stein, find him over there on Twitter at @TheJoelStein and find me over there as well at @Storyworthy. All right, you guys, thank you again so much for tuning in on behalf of the very talented Joel Stein. My name is Christine Blackburn saying, make it a story-worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.